Hi, and welcome to Jolly's Spring 2022 podcast series. This is Yixuan Wan, the principal editor of the Journal of Language and Literacy Education. We are a peer-reviewed open access journal housed in the Department of Language and Literacy Education at the University of Georgia. Today, I'll be speaking with Dr. Apley, Dr. Stack Peterson, and Dr. Woods, and their article is titled Representations of Indigenous and Non-Indigenous Rural Ways of Being in Picture Books for Children. Thank you very much for joining me today, and I look forward to hearing more about your work. And I do prepare some questions. So the first one, I just want to know, what was the natural and spiritual background of your childhood, respectively?
Okay, this is Dr. Karen Epley. I'll go first. I grew up in rural central Pennsylvania in the Bald Eagle Valley of the Northern Appalachian Mountains. Mm-hmm. For much of my childhood, life was lived outside all year round, in and adjacent to, on the creek, on bikes, four-wheelers, and on foot, with the other kids in my little borough of 300 people with three churches. Church was inseparable from family for me, and my great-great-grandma Carver was the matriarch.
Okay, thank you so much. How about other two authors?
This is Shelley Steig Peterson, and I grew up in rural Saskatchewan in Alberta in Canada, and our lives really did revolve around the land. My dad worked in the oil and gas field, so he was out in the bush when we were out in the area by the Rocky Mountains by Jasper, and he found the best huckleberry and blueberry patches, so I remember very fondly going with my family to pick berries in the late summer, early fall. And then we moved to a mixed farm and my parents became farmers. And I have very fond memories of riding the horse out into the pasture to see the cows. I remember one time my uncle taking us on his horse to go see a fox den where there were some newborn kits, I think baby foxes are called. And as far as the spiritual aspect, I would say that informally, just the feeling of peace and well-being that I've always had in the bush or out on the prairies, I have found to be very spiritual. But, you know, when you're living in rural Alberta, formal spirituality is also part of your life, as our family attended church regularly.
Thank you so much. And how about Dr. Wood?
Well, I'm of Métis, which is Indigenous and settler ancestry. And I grew up in the city, which is Toronto, Ontario, and the bush. And so when I was young, we'd spend summers in the bush up in the Curve Lake Haliburton area. And I knew all the trees and the plants, you know, which ones you could eat and which ones would make you sick. And I was able to walk silently through the woods so that small animals would come up to me and I'd be able to observe the nature around me. And I knew the names of the trees and the plants and the animals in that area. And I felt at home in the trees, you know, and the rock and the water. But to be honest, I spent most of my time in the city. But once again, like Karen, I spent most of my days outdoors. And if you look in any city or any place, there's always natural places where you can make a connection to Mother Earth and our non-human kin. And, you know, now as a professor, I have the opportunity and the privilege to be able to work with northern and remote and rural communities. And that's where I do my research and spend a great deal of time working with the people there.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think you already touched a little bit for the next questions. So my next question is, what previous life and research experiences inspired the collaboration of this research in your article?
I can speak to this one. This is Shelley. We all, as you've heard, have an interest in rural communities. We all have an interest in Indigenous worldviews and experiences. And so we came together to work on the Northern Oral Language and Writing Through Play project. It's a partnership project that is in its ninth year now, ninth of 14 years. And we have collaborated on a number of projects where we're focusing on rural communities, drawing on our lived experience and also on our research experience. And I'm going to turn things over now to Jeffrey to talk about qualitative research.
Yeah, so for me, my Indigenous background sort of, it draws us into relation and into relationship. And so the research, you know, as I was a young scholar and actually first started doing research as a teacher in my own classroom, I was naturally drawn to qualitative research because when we think from an Indigenous perspective, right, it's intensely local. And I know this leads into sort of other questions that you might have, but when we think in terms of the land, the languages that we speak come from the land and the culture that we have comes from the language, right? And our identities come from that culture. And so as an Indigenous scholar, I was drawn toward qualitative research because I saw all research or important research as being local and concerned with place, which sort of large scale quantitative research, it gets lost. And for me, it's those, it's the individual differences and why things happen and the uniqueness of the people that I work with that really spark an interest for me. And so I think that that's when we think about our worldviews and our lives and where we come from, it leads us down different paths. And so for me, it's all about connection and being in relation. And so that's what's led me to working with Karen and Shelley specifically, because they both have that same, even though they're settlers, they both have this strong connection to the land and strong value of being in relation to the land and to each other. And, this idea of respect and reciprocity.
Thank you so much. Dr. Apley, do you have any thoughts for this question?
No, I just want to say that I really appreciate both those characterizations from Shelley and Jeffrey, particularly about how this work tries to make some connections between geography and the land and story. I think we do that in a really intentional way.
Yeah, thank you so much. When our team received your submission, we were very excited, especially for this spring issue, because our theme is language and literacy through international citizenship education. So my next question is, how does the discussion of the diverse rural life or diversity of rural life contribute to the larger discussion of diversity, equity, and inclusion?
I loved that you asked this question. Thank you so much. So I would start by saying that rural is often defined based on population density, but in this paper, we operationalize rural more broadly as an interaction between geographic, cultural, and social characteristics. Many rural communities grapple with issues such as geographic isolation, access to resources, poverty, and teacher shortages. But rural communities themselves are also diverse. They might be based economically on farming, food processing, or resource extraction. They might be located in areas with a legacy of inequity, such as the South or Appalachia, may be located on the reserves or have high numbers of recent immigrants. Because of the opportunities of primary industry in rural communities, they're not impoverished and underdeveloped as a monolith. And I've heard many urbanites explain that as kind of a taken for granted characteristic of rural communities that we find to be untrue. Rural communities like urban do have particular challenges and affordances that can be traced to historical, political, economic, and cultural influences. So that means that understanding rural calls for an understanding of how these dimensions play out in contemporary rural life. But rural is clearly a stigmatized social difference. Shelley, do you want to get in on that?
I have a story to tell about that stigmatized social difference. And it's just one of many, but this is one that I remember from academia. So as a doctoral student, I remember a professor complaining about how narrow the experience was of the initial teacher education students who were coming from rural communities. Now, the professor knew that I was from a rural community of about 200 people, in fact, and from a farm. But yet that didn't seem to bother this professor in speaking so disparagingly about the rural students. And I think that there is truly an issue of diversity here when we think about rural being defined as something that's not as rich, not as diverse, not as sophisticated, not as worthwhile. It's always seen as something less than urban. And often I find that when, and it came through in our paper too, when we were analyzing some of the picture books that were set in rural communities, that the rural setting was seen as a destination for urban people for tourism, or the rural community was seen as something that was going to evolve into a higher state of being, which would be an urban setting instead. So that's where I would see many of the issues coming in terms of diversity and inequities, thinking about rural or picturing rural in such a negative deficit way.
Thank you so much for your answers. And I want to say your article really talk on those topics. And I think you, like all of you, did such a great job explaining those nuances. So based on your answers for my previous questions, I hear keywords like reciprocity, land, nature, and making king was more than human beings. So my final question is, how the theoretical framework and analysis in your article show a very different onto-epistemological paradigm and relationship between human beings and nature. So could you please share how this understanding or how this theoretical framework impacts your teaching, research, and maybe daily life?
Well, I think, I've already started to talk about this, but I think when we look at things through an Indigenous perspective, right? What we're doing is we're looking for relation and connection with each other and the world around us. We think in terms of the future and the past and our connections to our ancestors, as well as our connections to future relatives. And I think that this is different than, you know, Western's approaches, right? Especially when you think in terms of sort of rural settings, you've got this strong focus on the individual and the independence and overcoming as individuals. Whereas from an Indigenous perspective, we, you know, it's something where when we think through this lens, it draws us together in connection and solidarity, right? It draws us to a connection to place with each other, our ancestors, non-human kin, and Mother Nature. And it draws us to a place where we think in terms of those relations, and it brings us to a place of gratitude and reciprocity. And so our work and our research is not about taking, it's about learning with and from and giving back, right? And so it's something that we are doing together. And so I think, for me, this worldview, this Indigenous worldview changes everything that we do in our work or in my work. And so it changes the way in which I teach, the way in which I do my research, and the way in which I interact with others.
Shelley or Carrie,
you have something to add?
You have spoken so eloquently, Jeffrey. The only thing I would add is that, you know, the spiritual nature of the relationships with other people and with nature and with everything in the environment has made me think about my role as a teacher and a researcher differently. In the Now Play project, we have 14 years. So it was a Now Play 1 was 7 years, and now we're into the third year of another 7 years. And I realize how important time is to developing relationships. And the notion that the research doesn't stop when the funding stops. So those who were involved in Now Play One know that they can continue to ask me questions about literacy in their communities, and I am very happy to be serving as a consultant, that my responsibilities as a researcher who is giving and not taking from the communities that are involved in the research endures. It's not something that just ends when the project officially ends. So I think time has a real value that I hadn't thought about before working with Jeffrey and with other Indigenous researchers and community members in the Northern communities that have been taking part in the Now Play project. And also just the notion of local issues. The COVID pandemic has really closed off opportunities to visit communities and to show the value by taking the time. It, you know, takes huge numbers of resources to visit northern remote communities. And I think it says something, it sends a very strong message about all the value that is placed on the community members and the issues that are important to community members when the researchers visit and don't just send a grad student or just don't just settle with virtual meetings. So I think all of those kinds of issues are sort of practical ways of thinking about those beautiful theoretical ideas related to reciprocity, relevance, relationship, and so on, that are part of Indigenous pedagogies and Indigenous worldviews.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think your answers are so beautiful and kind of healing in a way. So our editorial team really appreciates your great and beautiful contribution to our spring issue. So those are all my questions. And thank you so much, Dr. Apley, Dr. Stack Peterson, Dr. Woods. And thank you so much for speaking with me today. And listeners, to read this manuscript, please check out Jolly's Spring 2022 issue, which will be published in May 2022.
Thank you for having us.